The title, you've heard the title. That's our basic philosophy of our society. Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita declares himself to be the Supreme Person. Now, of course, in the material world nowadays, everyone is more or less declaring themselves to be the Supreme Person. So it's not surprising that Krishna would also declare himself to be the Supreme Person. In any case, everyone has their group of followers, however big or small, that agree with the idea that someone is the Supreme Person. Now, our definition of the Supreme Person, according to the Vedic literature, our basic philosophy, Aishvaryasya Samagrasya Viryasya Yashashastriyaha Gyanavairagyaschaiva Shana Bhaghitinganaha. In other words, everyone has considered themselves to be better than others based upon criteria that they must be superior in some way. Now, according to Parasara Muni, there are six different opulences that more or less someone may be superior or inferior, namely wealth or knowledge or beauty or fame or strength or renunciation. In other words, everyone in this material world has a certain amount of beauty. Everyone has a certain amount of wealth. Everyone has a certain amount of knowledge. Everyone has a certain amount of strength. And everyone has a certain amount of fame. And everyone has a certain amount of renunciation. So one is considered to be superior or inferior to others based upon one's relative amount of those opulences. Now, Krishna declares himself to be the Supreme because he says he's the source of all these opulences. Whatever opulence we see, he said, comes from him. Now, generally speaking, we have to accept that everything came from something or someone. For instance, Krishna says that he's a person. Now we happen to be persons also, and therefore we can assume that the source of everything must also be a person. For instance, each one of us had a father and a mother, and our fathers and mothers also had fathers and mothers. So we trace it back throughout our ancestry, we should find ourselves with the original father and mother. Otherwise, if the original father was not a person, how did we become persons? Even in the animal kingdom, we can understand from monkeys come monkeys, from giraffe come giraffe, from people come people. And therefore, the original, whatever the product is, came from a source. For instance, in this room, there's heat and light. And we understand that it came from something, namely from the sun, the original source of heat and light. So the original person, the original source of everything, must also have personality, but they must have everything that we see and perhaps more. Now, Krishna says there's a process of realizing that. For instance, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna had started out by saying that we're not this body, we're eternal souls. He didn't just say it, he said that it's an intellectual given that we're eternal. For instance, that every moment our bodies are changing, but we ourselves are not changing. We had a little baby body, we had a 15-year-old body, and now we have these bodies, and our bodies will continuously change. As a matter of fact, at this very moment, they're changing. But we ourselves, who are aware of these bodies that are always changing, we ourselves are the same person. Otherwise, the person who walked into this room right now would be different from the person who left the room later on if we were changing. Certainly our bodies will be different, but we won't be different. So our eternality must be there, because otherwise we wouldn't be aware of who we were in the past. So there's something that's steadily there, that's aware of all the changes that this body and our minds are going through, and our personalities. Sometimes people may say, well, my personality is different. Well, we hope it's different. But often we see that people start out as children with a certain personality, and then after some time they develop a more adult personality, and in the course of their life, they reverse back to their childlike mentality. So, but the person who has that childlike mentality, either as a child or in old age, is still the same person. So with those two basic understandings, that we're eternal and that there's a supreme person, there must be a process of realizing this, just like there's a process of even understanding it by hearing. So there's also must be a process of realizing it. So in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Machita machkata prana bodhiyantash parashpuram katayantasram nityam tushanti charamanti cha. That the thoughts of my pure devotees, they dwell in me, their lives are surrendered to me, and they derive great satisfaction and bliss by enlightening one another and conversing about me. In other words, the way we learn anything is by hearing. By hearing, we can understand what is the path of doing something to get some result. So Krishna says, if we hear machita, machkata, prana, about how to perform an activity with our energies that we have, and the result should be that we're looking for one or two results, either to shanti or ramanti. In other words, basically what everyone's looking for is to find the source of all happiness. If there is a supreme person that from which everything comes, he must be the source of happiness also. If the supreme person was full of unhappiness, it wouldn't be very good. It wouldn't be a good idea to realize the supreme person. Better remain in ignorance than to realize the supreme unhappiness. But if the original person is the source of everything, they also must be the source of all happiness. So we can understand, if we're approaching the supreme, if we're becoming more, at least, satisfied. And what is that? Tushanti means satisfaction. Ramanti means actual happiness. So tushanti really means we're getting free from our misconceptions of life. Our misconception of life is when we're not aware of who we actually are, but we misidentify ourselves with something we're not, namely this gross and subtle body. So we find out a process of how to utilize this gross body that we're in, as well as our subtle mind, to realize our actual identity, and we become free from all the misconception that I'm going to grow old, become diseased, and then die, and I don't know where I'm going after this body. That if we actually realize that we're eternal, then we become satisfied. We become free from distress, the fear of dying, which is what everyone is worried about. That's the main fear in the material world, is that we're going to leave this body and then disappear. That is all, we just, poof, that's it. So if we actually become aware of who we are, then there's no more fear. And if there's no more fear, then we can actually come to the platform of becoming happy. Or as Krishna in the second chapter said, that for one who's not in divine consciousness can have neither controlled mind nor steady intelligence, without which there's no possibility of peace, and how can there be any happiness without peace? In other words, if we're not aware of our eternality, we can't be peaceful, and if we're not peaceful, how can we actually be genuinely happy? And if there's a supreme person, then there must be a process of, well, he can give us a process of realizing him. And he says in the next verse that not only we should know the supreme, but we should, well, that particular verse says we should try to belong to Krishna's family. In other words, the Krishna or God, he also has a family. Everyone belongs to something. If we don't belong to Krishna's family, then we must belong to some other family, some other idea, some other group of people. So Krishna says, in my family, when you hear about me, and then you hear about how to become part of my family, so that as you become part of my family, you become aware of our eternal family. In other words, to become. First, we have to hear that there is a God, that he's the source of everything, that he's everyone's friend. He's the actual, if he's happy, if he's pleased, and everyone is pleased. Then we have to become willing to live with him, recognize him. And then that means that we become one with him in the sense that we become one in agreement with him. And then we can actually take to the process of following his instructions so that we can become back to our original position again. Nowadays, people don't know what to believe. They have so many ideas about the Supreme. They think everything came out of nothing. And that everything becomes nothing. As I said before, they believe that in the beginning there was nothing. And then nothing became bored. Because after all, he was good for nothing. Luckily, his mother wanted him to become something. Because everyone has to have a mother. So mother nothing told son nothing, why don't you become something? So he tried real hard for a long time. And it's very, when you're nothing, when you're good for nothing, it's very hard to do anything that has any substance to it. But somewhere or another, after many, many, because he had a lot of time, because he had nothing to do. So he tried real hard and finally became something. He became some gas, according to our scientists. Not very much gas, but it was something. So his mother said, you know, I mean, it's good that you tried, at least you became something, but it's not very much. So why don't you, you know, try and make something out of yourself? So the gas formed into a rock. So she said, at least you become steady. At least we can say you're a solid member of our family. But it's not good enough. So finally, son nothing became angry because he tried so hard and his mother didn't appreciate it. She still thought he was good for nothing, although he had become a rock. So he exploded out of anger, flew everywhere for a long time, and finally his mother said, well, why don't you settle down? So he settled down and here we are now. So that's one philosophy, that actually where we all came from was nothing, and therefore more or less we're all good for nothing. Just following our father's footsteps. So with this philosophy, we think that we're just another evolved creature from the monkeys. And they're just evolved creature from the sheep, which are evolved creatures from the mice, which came from the rocks, which ultimately were nothing. Not a very exciting philosophy. So the fact is that if there's an original person, then he also, and we're all parts and parcels of him, then we all originally belong to his family, and now we're simply trying to imitate the original family, that's all. We're trying to pretend that we ourselves are the center of the universe, that we ourselves are the source of so many different things, but that's just imitation. It's just a forgetfulness of who we actually are. So therefore Krishna says, first you have to understand that I exist, then you have to hear how you can join my family again. And in the family, what do? They hear about what's actually real. For instance, we're eternal, that there's a supreme person. Who is the most attractive person? He's not an old man, you know, clutching things. He's actually the eternally the most attractive, beautiful person, the most intelligent person. For instance, we may not be able to perceive how beautiful Krishna is, how strong Krishna is, how famous Krishna is, how renounced Krishna is, how wealthy Krishna is, but we can find out how intelligent Krishna is if we read his book, the Bhagavad Gita. And therefore Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, if you follow my instructions with enthusiasm, then I'm in everyone's heart and I'll give you intelligence by which you can come back to your original state of awareness and consciousness of your real identity. Therefore he says, Tesham sadatam yuktanam bhajantam pritipurvakam tadami buddhiyogam tam yena mam upiyanti te. To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, then I give them the understanding by which they can come to me. In other words, everyone has a propensity to love something. That's the nature of life, is to love someone or something. And if God or Krishna is the most attractive, then naturally our tendency to love would be focused on him normally. But because we've dispersed our love to so many different objects, we're trying to be happy, loving different things, we're only getting a little bit of the reciprocation that we actually desire. Because we may love something beautiful, but that, or something strong or wealthy or famous, someone, but they only have a fraction of the attraction that we're actually looking for. But if we become aware of Krishna, if Krishna reveals himself, because we can't demand that God reveal himself to us, we can notice his presence by his great intelligence, how he's, for instance, created the universe. And if we look at the universe, we can understand there must be an intelligence behind it. Much more intelligent than anyone else is able to manifest it. For instance, as one great devotee said in the Brahma Samhita, that yats chaksha esha savitasa kala grahanam raja samamorsti samamorsti, that yats chaksha esha savita Brahma, that the sun is one of the eyes of the Supreme Person. Yats chaksha esha savita sakala Brahana, Raja, Samasa, Suramurti, Asheshe, Teja, Yasyagaya, Brahmati, Samrita, Kalachakra, Govindam, Adi, Purusham, Tamahang, Bhujami. We can see God, Krishna's presence just if we look at the sun. Because the sun is full of infinite effulgence. At every moment, according to the scientists, the sun is giving off more heat and light than is all of human society has utilized throughout its whole history. At one moment. And yet, although the sun is so powerful that if the earth moved a little closer to the sun, or the sun a little closer to the earth, then everything would burn up. And if the earth or the sun moved a little further away from each other, then everything would freeze. So every day we see the sun rising at a certain time and the sun setting at a certain time. And the scientists can tell us in 100 years exactly where the sun is going to be, when it's going to rise, when it's going to set. We don't even know where we're going to be tomorrow. With all our intelligence, we don't know when we're going to rise and when we're going to set. But the sun is exactly in an orbit, although it's so powerful. Just like in India, sometimes they take a bull and they attach the bull by its nose to a pole with a rope. And the bull is so strong that it pulls behind it a very heavy weight in order to crush grains as it goes around in a circle. So though the bull is so powerful, it can pull a weight that 50 strong men could not pull, still the bull cannot move 1 inch beyond the rope. So though the sun is full of infinite effulgence, so powerful with its heat and light, still it's exactly in an orbit. So the question is, who actually put it in its orbit? The scientists say it's all by accident. It all came about by accident. So if it was all an accident, well, why don't the scientists build a little tiny sun and put it over the North Pole and help out the Eskimos? Why don't they just build a tiny sun and the sun can just revolve around the North Pole? If they can't do that, then why don't they just build one the size of a light bulb and let it circumambulate or go around this room? Then we can save so much money on electricity. But they can't even build a little tiny sun. What to speak of a sun so big that it gives heat and light to our whole universe? But Lord Brahma says, Govindam Adi Purusham Tamahang Bhujami. At least Lord Brahma, who's said to be one of the creators of the universe on behalf of Krishna, he says, I worship Govinda because he's put the sun, he's created this amazing entity called the sun, and it's giving us heat and light exactly as we need it, and it's exactly on time. Every morning it rises a certain time and sets at a certain time. Or for another example, if a scientist could create a male machine and a female machine, that would be very good. As I said before, if he created a Rolls Royce, a male Rolls Royce and a female Rolls Royce, and then when they get together, they make little Rolls Royces. And if you could feed the Rolls Royce, little Rolls Royces, enough gas and oil, then it grows up to become a big Rolls Royce. And then everyone can get a Rolls Royce. No extra cost. You just have to give it a little gas and oil. Maybe a little water sometimes. Cool it down. But the scientists can't do that. They can't even make two Rolls Royces that make little Rolls Royces. But Krishna has made that in 8,400,000 species of life, called male and female. And they get together and they make little versions of themselves and they grow up and make still keep on expanding. Or if a scientist can create a machine, you put in one end, you put grass, and the other end, you get milk. That would be a very nice machine. You mow your lawn, and you feed the machine, and then you can get ice cream. But there's no machine like that, except Krishna has made that machine. It's called the cow. You put one end grass, and the other end comes out milk. And then we get ice cream. So with a little use of our intelligence, we can perceive the fact that there is a person behind the universe, an intelligent person who's given us so many different things here in the universe for our existence. And he claims that aham bija prajapita, that he's the original father of everyone. And he has a relationship with everyone, as explained in the Bhagavad Gita. And if we want to join with him, then we have to join his family and work together to hear about him and then serve him according to his desire. And part of that desire is that we should have the same desire he has. And his desire is that everyone becomes happy by reconnecting ourselves with him and his family, because in that state were eternal, and therefore there's nothing to worry about. There are activities there, but those activities are all pleasurable because they're all based upon love. Here in the material world, when we become attached to these gross and subtle bodies, then we take this body as our supreme, as the object of our worship and our love. Just like I've said before, we wake up in the morning and we look into the mirror and we ask the mirror, 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 on the wall, who's the greatest of them all? And generally everyone gets the same response, that my dear soul, out of good fortune, you finally have gotten a view of the Supreme within the mirror. So please now render unalloyed, uninterrupted service to that deity you see in the mirror. And generally everyone becomes very enlivened and become convinced that my day will be successful when I become a pure devotee of that deity. And so if we're a little pious, we take a shower. We call that in Sanskrit abhishek. We bathe the deity. Then we dress the deity. We put perfume or cologne on the deity. We feed the deity different types of food. And then we go out into the world to spread the glories of the deity everywhere, so everyone can get a chance to worship our deity. So everyone has a deity. So for the one who's in the material conception of life, this body is our most worshipable object. Unfortunately, if there are 8 billion people on the planet, there are 8 billion different objects of worship. It doesn't make for a very harmonious family when everyone has a different object of attention and giving our love to that object. So the point is, if there is a Supreme Person, he's infinitely more attractive and lovable than even our own bodies. Not that we neglect our body, but the body has a purpose. Just like a car has a purpose. The purpose of the car is to drive us to a destination. So the purpose of this body, especially in the human form of life, is to help us, drive us back to our original awareness of our relationship with the Supreme, who is the most lovable object, much more lovable than a dead material body, much more lovable than any amount of dead material bodies, because he's the Supreme Father, Supreme lovable object for everyone. So therefore, Krishna simply suggests that we learn to understand him properly, and then with a little bit of steadiness and some enthusiasm, we follow his directions. And his directions are not so bad, because his directions are to create unity in this world rather than disharmony based upon a desire to become the Supreme and control the material energy, control others in the material energy, so that we ourselves personally can become happy. But instead of that, if we understand that the root of existence is Krishna, who's giving us everything we need, heat, light, food, water, everything we need is ultimately coming from him, and that if we serve him without, as it says, there's enough for everyone's need here, but there's not enough for everyone's greed. So when we take ourselves as the center of existence, then we'll fight with everyone else who's trying to become the center of existence. But we all recognize the same center of existence, who exists not only to be served, but also to provide everything we have, everything we need, and especially the well-wish of all living entities, who's kindly given us so many things. But ultimately, on the spiritual platform, we have a loving relationship with him, that he exists, he doesn't need anything. And when we're on the spiritual platform, we don't need anything material either, except for a loving relationship with the original all-attractive person. And since he's all-attractive for everyone, and everyone can have the same object of worship. Just like if you water a tree, if you water each leaf and branch of the tree, the tree does not really benefit. But if one waters the root of the tree, And naturally, all the different part, the branches and leaves of the tree will be supplied with the water. Similarly, if we provide food to the stomach, then naturally all the different parts of the body are served. Similarly, if we serve the Supreme, the original person, then everyone has actually been benefited spiritually and materially also. So in this age, of course, it is very difficult for us to practically perform the activities of self-realization because life has become so complicated, we can hardly get out of bed in the morning in order to just do our basic activities. So therefore, Krishna has given us an opportunity to serve him in a very simple way, because after all, being the Supreme Person, he already has everything. The only thing he really wants is our attention and our love. But since our attention and our love has been given, splattered all over the place to so many different objects, he's given us an opportunity to personally associate with him through the chanting of these names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And if one learns how to chant these names with a certain amount of reverence and a certain amount of attention, a certain amount of understanding, then Krishna has agreed to reveal himself to us so that we become aware of him, we become aware of ourselves, we become aware of everyone and everything in relationship to him. Just like at night, when everything is dark, it's very difficult to understand things clearly. But when the sun rises, then automatically in the light of the sun, we can see ourselves, we can see the sun, we can see each other, we can see everything clearly in the light of the sun. So similarly, if one accepts reality, we say reality in the sense that we're actually eternal servants of the Supreme, and that he's all good, and that he could actually reveal himself to us if we follow the process that he suggests. In this age, he suggests that we chant his names with a certain amount of understanding and reverence and attention, and then he'll gradually reveal himself to us. Or, there are other methods also, but that's the easiest method for having Krishna to reveal himself. We can't force the sun to come up, but when the sun does come up, then everything is revealed. So similarly, we can't force God to reveal himself, but if he says it's a process by which he'll reveal himself if we follow it, and in this age he says if we chant Hare Krishna or any name of God, if we call out to him, asking him humbly to reveal himself to us, and if he agrees to do it, then we can experience what God is actually like, what Krishna is actually like. We don't have to imagine it. We don't have to believe it blindly. Just like Bhagavad Gita, we don't have to believe anything blindly, what it says in the Bhagavad Gita. But at least we should have some openness to at least give it a try and see if it works or not. And if it doesn't work, we haven't lost anything. It doesn't cost anything to chant Hare Krishna. And if it does work, then we might have a different experience of life, a different understanding of life, a different vision. Maybe we'll actually be able to appreciate how the sun was given by the Supreme Person, how the milk we're getting is given was made by a divine arrangement. Maybe that they're male and female. Of course, in America, they don't believe that anymore. But at least here in Slovenia, I think they still believe there are males and females. That these things were not made by accident. That is, and if it becomes clearer by chanting Hare Krishna, then it's so much the better. And if it doesn't work, then maybe you can join something else. So this is what's being offered. Bhagavad Gita is there. We don't have, as I said, we don't have to blindly accept it. But why should we blindly reject it? Why not find out if he's God, if Krishna is actually the Supreme Person, maybe he has something intelligent to say in the Bhagavad Gita, in this book. And if we read it, we can judge ourselves with our own intelligence, whether or not it's actually true or not. Are we actually eternal? When the body's changing, are we actually changing? Did we walk in here as Bob and we walk out of here as Lucy? We can see if it actually makes any sense or not. So that's up to us to do it. It's being offered, and then we can judge for ourselves. You can judge, I think they say, at least in America they say, you judge the pudding by its taste. So you can judge a thing by its result. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
So at the beginning you mentioned...
I don't think it's on.
Hare Krishna.
Yeah.
No, we're on. So at the beginning of lecture you mentioned that nothing became something.
I guess so.
Yeah. I mean, that's the prevalent theory in today's modern world. If you start to explain people about other view than theory of evolution of Darwin, and that everything didn't became from nothing or with the Big Bang, they immediately treat you as a religious fanatic, and you don't even have a space to speak. So how to speak to people, you know,
well,
not
I
to
mean,
give you to some corner.
I don't think most people really think deeply about how everything came out of nothing. In other words, I don't think most people are not really very attached to that idea. They're a little attached to that, you know, evolution. At least in America, some people accept it and some people don't accept it. I don't know about here. But the fact that they really are strongly attached to their great-great-great-grandfather was a monkey. And that and his great-great-great-grandmother was also a monkey. Grandfather Harry and Lucy, grandmother Lucy. And they gave birth to a child who looked something like my brother. I don't think people are really so attached to it. I don't think they expect to go to the zoo and look and say, my God, that little monkey there does look like my brother. They don't really believe it in their heart. That they know it's... I mean, most people really... I mean, unless they're just... fanatic, religionist, born again, nothings. Most people understand it doesn't really make very much sense. At least as far as I understand. That, you know, how do they actually think that from monkeys came human beings? Or from a sheep came a monkey? I mean, no one has an experience like that. There's no experience. So it's just a theory. But they accept it because they don't really hear anything else that makes any sense. Nor do they really care, because most people are just happy if they pay the bills. They don't really deeply think about philosophy. Besides that, it's nice to go into the museum and showing all the bones to their children. That was our ancestor, the Tyrannosaurus Rex. We're small now, but our ancestors are real big. Now, if you try to claim to people that there's, you know, you have to accept God or else you're going to go to hell or something like that, then people will object. But otherwise, most people would probably, they're not really attached to that my grandfather was a monkey. How dare you say that he was a person? Anything else? Yes.
Hello. I'm new here. one question.
We're all kind of new in some ways. It's all right.
I wanted to say
Did you want to ask a question?
А я в
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. A lahko poveste kaj o samorealizaciji? Can you say something about can you say something about self-realization, the process? How does it look like? Have you ever met such a person? How did it feel like?
Well, the first time I met my spiritual teacher, physically, I met him in 1968, but physically I saw him in 1969. The first time I saw him, I thought he was floating down the airport. And then I had an opportunity to see him many times. Generally, I felt like I was in the spiritual world when I associated with him. And what was he like? He was the humblest person I ever knew. He was the kindest person I ever knew. And he had the most selfless, he was completely selfless. So that's what he was like. And whatever he said, whatever he was teaching, he was following himself. He didn't say one thing and do something different. He said, chant Hare Krishna, then he was doing it himself. But when he did it, he was in a different world. And everyone felt that world and then noticed that he was in a different world. So what is self-realization? Generally, the path of self-realization is first becoming free from hankering and lamentation. The process of doing that, not worrying about everything, being able to actually be in the present, and actually appreciate and experience what's going on right now. Then understanding where everything comes from and understanding who we are and what our relationship with that source of everything is. That's called Jnana Yoga. First one is called Karma Yoga, then Jnana Yoga, then it is Ashtanga Yoga, which is the process of meditation to realize that supreme within the heart. And then the ultimate yoga is called bhakti yoga, to not only realize the supreme within the heart, but to develop a loving relationship with that person, with everyone, to come to the platform of loving everyone and everything selflessly without any other desires for worrying about what we're going to get from that relationship, to selflessly love everyone. So that's my spiritual teacher, Srila Prabhupada. That's what I experienced from him. And that's what he was teaching us to come to that platform. Is that right? Thank you. Anything else? Thank you, Kuala Grantharaj, Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Ki Jai.